Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Big Float X on Sunday, July 10th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Tom McCall Bowl in Portland. The Big Float X is the 10th anniversary and final iteration of the Big Float, Portland's celebration of the Willamette River. Festivities include a pre-float parade, live music, and after-party. That's the Big Float X on Sunday, July 10th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Tom McCall Bowl, 90 Southwest Nito Parkway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host, and our topic this evening is Starbucks workers strike. Our guests are Quentin Canta and Isabel Leverage. Did I say that right? Leverage?
Yes.
Of Starbucks Workers United. Quentin recently was a lead organizer at the Walker Road Starbucks in Beaverton, and Isabel is a lead organizer at the Jansen Beach store. Thank you both for joining. Let's start with the news. Starbucks has nearly 9,000 company-run locations in the U.S. with 235,000 employees, made $4 billion in profit last year, and has a long history of union busting. But over 200 Starbucks shops and counting across the country have filed for unionization elections with the National Labor Relations Board since the Buffalo, New York Starbucks shop won their union election in December. The speed of this unionization effort is breathtaking. Workers United, a Service Employees SEIU affiliate, is behind the effort and has successfully organized other coffee shops in Buffalo in recent years, and some of the Buffalo Starbucks crew had worked at other unionized shops previously, and now shops all over the country are calling Buffalo for advice. The workers leading these organizing drives across the U.S. are largely shift supervisors, like Isabel here, whose job is to coordinate the day-to-day running of a store, in their 20s, and much of the workforce is that age too, and many workers are LGBTQ, and Starbucks professes progressive values, and many workers say they are organizing to hold a company to its word. So here in the Portland area, 12 Starbucks shops in the Portland have filed for union election. Four have just won their elections by unanimous or overwhelming majorities. So Quentin and Isabel, why do you think this outbreak of organizing is happening at Starbucks? And what is the national mood? What is it about this particular workforce? Either one of you want to jump in?
I'll start us off. Like you said, Jamie, a lot of us are young, and we're also a very queer group of people. And I think that Starbucks attracts people like that because they claim to have very progressive values. I know when I got hired at Starbucks, I really appreciated the progressive values that they claimed to hold. And that's what brought me into this specific company. And going forward with that, we are not willing to put up with things like this. We understand that direct action is the only way to make change, and that we are capable of making change. We've seen it a lot in the last couple of years, and so we know it's possible and necessary.
I would add on to that the younger generations have grown up in a time where there is record-breaking social movement after record-breaking social movement. So we've grown up in a time of unrest. We've grown up in a time where just everyday economics is radicalizing more and more people. And so as young people, and specifically for many of us as queer people, we are kind of hyper sensitized to the oppression that we face in everyday life. And so for a lot of us, the pandemic, especially in Starbucks's behavior over the past couple of years, just all of that has become really clear. And so if you look at the baristas who are leading this movement, it's those exact same people who are facing oppression and exploitation in their everyday lives. And they're seeing that trickle over into the workplace.
So speak some more about the conditions of the pandemic and how that contributed to this upsurge of organizing.
Yeah, so I think for a lot of people, the pandemic was this really radicalizing moment where it became really clear that, you know, money was doing fine during the pandemic. Like, moneyed interests weren't losing anything. In fact, a lot of companies saw higher profits than ever before, Starbucks included. Starbucks posted record profits last year during the height of a pandemic. And notably, during the same year in which they offered buyouts to tens of thousands of baristas around the country. At the beginning of the pandemic, when everything was shutting down, Starbucks extended offers to baristas that you can take this payout. It was somewhere in the couple thousand dollar range. But basically it meant you're not going to be furloughed. You can claim unemployment. We'll give you some money now. You won't be employed by Starbucks anymore. They were trying to keep payroll costs low. And the result of that was not a company that was trying to stay afloat. It was a company that was trying, you know, bigger and bolder methods of generating profit, and it worked for them. The pandemic was just this really radicalizing moment where everybody could see, like, on an individual level, people seemed to be really struggling to get by. Cost of living is soaring. Right now you're living during a mass widespread preventable disease that is losing income for people. A lot of people lost their jobs during the pandemic. But we see these big businesses that are not only staying afloat, but are making more money than ever before. We see politicians that don't really seem eager to address any of these issues. And so for a lot of people, right, if you also consider that the Black Lives Matter movement, again, exploded after the murder of George Floyd, that happened at the height of the pandemic. And so people really, like I mentioned, are just very keenly aware of what's going on in our everyday lives right now. And working, at the front line of service work and having companies call us essential workers and treat us like that for 2 months and then go back to business as usual. Starbucks doesn't see us as essential workers anymore. That's the whole point of this union movement, is to show Starbucks, not only are we essential workers, but all workers are essential to the companies that they generate profit for. Starbucks is nothing without its baristas.
Were there specific situations that either of you faced at the workplace related to the pandemic that that led to this initiative and the organizing?
A few months before we filed for union election at my store, this was last summer, there was a moment in which it was like 75 to 80% of my store was exposed to COVID. Many of those people tested positive. And so I'd gotten a call from my boss saying that I was exposed and I had a shift the next day, and I asked him, okay, so what do I need to do? Do I need to go get tested? And he said, well, if you're not showing symptoms, Starbucks doesn't say you have to get tested. So we'll see you tomorrow morning for your shift. I was not given any choice in the matter. I was not given the choice to say, no, I'm not comfortable knowing that 80% of our store was exposed. And so I still showed up to work the next morning. I didn't have any recourse. And it was just bonkers. I described it at the time as a Twilight Zone situation. So I came into work and I did not recognize a single barista on the floor that morning. The entire store was staffed with baristas that were brought in, shuttled in from other stores in the district, because we simply didn't have enough staff that was safe to be at work and work on the floor. The one coworker that I knew that day was one of our shift supervisors. And she just kind of explained, yeah, everybody's out sick right now. She said, thank you for being here, as if I had a choice in the matter. I was not given a choice in the matter. And that was, I gotta say, one of the more disorienting shifts I've ever worked at Starbucks, just from the standpoint of nobody knew what they were doing or where anything was located at the store. I had to answer questions for baristas all day long about where stuff was located. And right, doing this on top of knowing I've been exposed, knowing I haven't had a chance to go get tested yet, that was a big moment for me personally. I don't know that day led anyone else in my store to feel more eager to organize. But definitely for me, that's a moment that I look back on in which Starbucks completely dropped the ball. There's no reason that store should have stayed open. All of us should have been paid to stay home and isolate. There's no reason we had to open the store that weekend.
You had anything, Isabel, on this?
I actually had a very, not super similar, but along the same lines. I would say a month or two before we filed our petition, one of our shift supervisors tested positive. And us supervisors are in contact with every single barista because we work so many different shifts during the week. And I got a call that this supervisor had tested positive. And I turned and looked at my floor of baristas, and every single one of them had been in contact with this person. And it was kind of a moment, like I froze, and my store manager was out of town. So it was just us supervisors running the store. I didn't know what to do, because suddenly I had 9 people on my floor who all needed to go home immediately. We have a drive-through full of cars, a lobby full of people. And it took us about an hour and a half to get out of there, which is really concerning considering that every single one of us had been exposed to COVID. And we were told that we did not need to go get tested. If we wanted to, we were welcome to, but it was not a requirement. And that if we were not showing symptoms, we could return to work. But none of us were comfortable with that. None of us were comfortable being there that day. And it was scary. And we didn't have the support we needed from the company or the manager.
Well, these stories are quite similar to stories we've heard across the workforce, throughout the working class, particularly among workers that have public contact and that kind of work. And I'm come from the letter carrier craft, and we had some of the same experiences, although we had quite a few more of guarantees as union workers to be able to not show up, to be able to get tested, to be able to be paid for the time off. But to talk more about the national mood and this outbreak of organizing, as students of labor history and having had the good fortune myself of being able to talk with labor organizers from the 1930s and 40s, this huge unionization growth, the huge unionization growth at that time was bottom up, not top down. And although major unions hired organizers to go out and organize in auto and steel and rubber, the union bug caught on through workers talking to workers in the same plant, in the same industry, in the same town. A wave of strikes, sit-downs, general strikes gave working class people the confidence to organize their coworkers, friends, and communities. A similar strike and organizing wave swept the working class during the 60s and 70s at the height of the Black liberation, anti-war, women's and gay movements. And this seems like a similar moment to me. What do you all think?
The first thing that pops into my head is the idea of bottom up, because that's exactly what we're doing. This is us baristas and us shift supervisors, not a third party working for us from above. This is us working towards what we need to keep, what's the word? Like, to keep the company going, because like we said, this company is nothing without us. And so it's very much bottom up. And I think that the idea that it is not bottom up is something that is being spread in an effort to scare people, but it is us baristas. And I think also similarly, we're seeing a lot of these same ideas being repeated. I hate to say that history is repeating itself, but I stood at a strike the other day, or a rally for Roe v. Wade. And so we're seeing that again, and we're seeing the labor movement again, and it's all coming back. And we can learn from what happened before, but we're doing it again.
I think also just to tack on to the idea of, Starbucks pitting the union as this outside force, this third party. I think the reason that they do that is because it's much harder for workers who are either skeptical of a union or anti-union, it's much harder for them to just ignore their own coworkers. So an example I can remember is when we were on the picket line at Jensen Beach this last week, and one of the anti-union workers showed up for the morning. We approached him. We didn't know he was a worker. We thought he was a customer trying to shop there. We said, oh, sir, please, these workers are on strike today. Please don't shop here. And he would not make eye contact with his coworkers that were on the picket line. And he said, no, we're not on strike. And so it's just this, like, it's just so obvious that Starbucks and anti-union workers just want to completely ignore the fact that their coworkers are the ones that are leading this movement. It's much easier to pit like the union as this outside enemy when you do that, because otherwise you have to look your coworkers in the face and say, no, I don't think you deserve better. I don't think we deserve better. And I don't think we're a team. I don't care about you. That's really what it boils down to. When you're an anti-union worker and you genuinely believe that, and you genuinely personally believe that Starbucks is a good company that takes care of you, that's what you're doing, is you're telling your coworkers, I don't care about you and I don't think you deserve better. And like, you know, we've tried like pleading with these workers at Jensen Beach and saying, well, look, Matt, your coworker, he was just fired. He had a year left of school that was ripped away from him. And they won't even engage with that. I had a worker at Jensen Beach try telling me, like, try justifying why Matt was fired. And it's just so offensive, and it plays right into the hands of what Starbucks wants. And so it's very inspiring to see that this is a worker-led movement, because it just gives absolutely no legitimacy to that argument and to that feeling that your coworkers aren't involved with this.
I think just adding on to that, I have had conversations with anti-union workers in my store, and very similar to what Quentin was saying, I had a coworker stand and he couldn't look me in the eyes and tell me that a third party does not know what we need. And I responded explaining to them that I'm on the bargaining committee, I'm sitting at the table, and that we are fighting for what we need. And they refuse to acknowledge it. Won't even acknowledge the argument. Because you're right, it is, they refuse to think that we need better. And working alongside that is really frustrating. And it's been something that's been really hard to overcome, because it feels like us versus them, but suddenly my coworker in the same position is with them.
If you've just tuned in, this is KBOO Portland. We're Labor Radio, talking to Quentin Canta and Isabel Leverage of Starbucks Workers United.
Have you seen people change their minds from anti or no to yes?
I personally have not seen that at my store, no.
I've heard about it from some other organizers in Portland, that not even people who are necessarily anti, just people who are skeptical of it. Mm-hmm. And the corporate behavior of Starbucks is really what convinces people, okay, maybe we do actually need this, right? If this billion-dollar corporation is going to fight so hard for us not to have it, and if we're going to bring our former CEO out of retirement back to the company to stabilize stock prices and scare people, then maybe we actually do need the union. And so, yeah, I mean, I've heard plenty of stories of people who were either anti-union or were just skeptical of unions, maybe don't see the need for it at Starbucks because we're treated well. And even if they continue to think that they're treated well, they care enough about their coworkers that they can see, well, the company is fighting my coworkers so hard, maybe they're onto something.
And you'll find, once you win the election, for example, at Jensen Beach, and which is coming up soon, and you start talking about bargaining, and so what do we want? What is it that we want to change here? The people that were anti are like, well, there is something that I want. Because if their coworkers are going into this bargaining process and they're left out, they're what they want is not going to be raised at the table. And so you find people starting to come around. But what are the main complaints and demands that you think people will want to bring to the table, to the bargaining table?
One of the biggest ones we hear about from everyone is a living wage. The wages that we're paid do not match where we live. as cost of living continues to rise, our wages do not. I think I've had one raise since I started working at Starbucks, and it was very minimal. At my store specifically, our hours and staffing are a huge issue. Right now, they can cut our hours and change our schedules at their discretion whenever they'd like. And we make a lot more money because we don't have enough people on the floor. But we are burnt out. I do the job of four people every day. And it's frustrating because if we have two people call out and we're expected to get the same amount of things done, but they're paying their workers less because they have less people, that's hard to see. And so just consistency in scheduling, not forcing us to open the store if we only have two baristas there. I know that's one of our big ones.
And I would tack on to that, especially during COVID, we see, right? So this is always an employer tactic, is rather than being mad at the company for making you stay open when you have less people, store level management especially will pit workers against each other and make you be mad at the person who called out sick, or, you know, be mad at the person even if they called out just because they don't want to be there. That's also fine. If you're calling out sick because you're overworked and don't want to go to work, I don't blame you. I've done that. I encourage people to do that. Cool. Like, you're not paid enough, so don't go into work if you don't want to. And so to address this, one of the proposals that the Buffalo Bargaining Committee has put forward is, if you're supposed to have, you know, seven baristas on the floor working during the day and two of them call out, rather than Starbucks just swallowing the wages from those two people, this proposal would require that Starbucks pay everyone on the floor more money because they were doing the work of two extra people. And so I think even people who are skeptical of the union, this is a proposal that would, like, you can't even quantify how much this is going to change the lives of people working, because all of a sudden you're going to be making more money when you're overworked and you're doing the work of more people. But also over time, it's going to change that culture of getting mad at your coworkers when they're calling out, because now all of a sudden, if you have to be working anyway, maybe you're thankful somebody called out because you're going to be making more money because of it. And so I really think, like, proposals that are going to address economic concerns for workers, but also proposals that are going to change the culture at the company to promote more solidarity and more respect of your fellow coworkers, those two things have to go hand in hand. And I think those are the best, that's the best possible strategy you can pursue in bargaining. So I'm very happy to see that many of the economic proposals that SBWU is putting forward address both those economic concerns and cultural concerns.
Love it. So what has been the response of Starbucks management to this national wave and in your particular stores?
Well, it has not been a positive response. I knew when we filed, just based on what was happening across the country, that management was not going to respond well. And I can't say that that's true for every store on a store level, but the higher ups are pushing a very negative message about unionizing. And that does trickle down whether your store manager is pro-union or not, because these are their bosses. And they, unfortunately, to a certain extent, do have to follow what they're asking. And so, I mean, we saw in Buffalo a huge amount of pushback, a ton of super high up people in the company flying in and doing jobs that they have never done before. And I think one of their main ideas that I've seen pushed nationally and at my store is trying to show that they were always there to support us and that we had the support we needed, but just weren't asking for it. I had a very specific conversation with my district manager where they insisted that the support I wanted had always been there. I just hadn't gone about asking for it in the right way. And since we filed, I have seen more support, but not in the way that we wanted it. We have a lot of managers in our store all the time, and they're always happy to check in with us and hop on the floor if we need help. And I've never once experienced that before. And it's not happening for the right reasons. it's not happening because they want to support us. It's happening because they want to prove that we are wrong and that this is not something we need. And so,
right. And so having more managers on the floor is not only going to negatively impact the barista experience and the partner experience, but I mean, I can even say as like a vocally and visibly pro-union customer, it's also negatively impacting the customer experience. And specifically at Jansen Beach, we've been harassed as customers multiple times by the management team there. Just as recently as yesterday, this happened. So the managers are definitely pissed that the workers are unionizing, but they're also, and maybe in some places, more pissed that the community is standing behind the baristas, because usually what managers can do is use customers as a cudgel against baristas, and that's not the case right now. So they're very upset about that.
Well, we'll get a little bit more into community support, but I wanted to ask you in particular about how you, Isabel, and coworkers have resisted management union busting tactics, in particular the strike that happened on Wednesday, or last, whenever it was.
Yeah.
On May the 18th. No, was it 18th? Yeah, the 18th.
Yeah.
At your shop and at the Grand Avenue store.
Yeah, so I'll be honest, it's been extremely hard to withstand the union busting. It's exhausting. And I think the biggest tactic that we've taken at our store is just educating our partners, trying not to emotionally react to them immediately. Just like taking the time to connect with everybody and like, hey, this is what's going on. Or even like giving them a heads up if we hear something's going on across the country that is probably going to come to us next. The strike was our second big show of like solidarity and that we're not putting up with this. We had a DSA rally at our store on the previous Saturday. That was kind of the first one, and I was excited for that because it showed my baristas that we do have people standing behind us who agree that this is not something we should be putting up with. The strike was in response to a couple of things. The big one being one of my coworkers being fired. He was one of our organizers and very active in sharing his opinion on unions and also very active in educating our partners and himself. He took a lot of steps to learn a lot about something he didn't know about previously. And so that was our first reason for going on strike, because it's not something, they didn't talk to us about it. It's not a conversation that had been had in the store. They're refusing to talk about it, and we're not going to let them run away from it. And we felt that striking was the next step we needed to take, because it does hurt the store and it does show that they do not function without us and that they cannot get away with that type of union busting or any union busting. We also have had a lot of labor cuts. I personally had my hours slashed, and I've had conversations about getting them back up and was told that there's not room on the schedule for me anymore. And lots of fellow partners have also had their hours cut, not as drastically, but it impacts our ability to live and pay rent. And again, we will not put up with that, and we needed them to know that, because they will not look us in the eyes and listen to us. And so this direct action was the next step.
Inspiring.
By the way, for context, Starbucks has never ever said there's not room for a shift supervisor on a schedule. Usually they're begging shift supervisors to take on more hours. Starbucks does everything in its power not to push people into overtime, but shift supervisors routinely go into overtime because they're needed on the floor. So it's ridiculous that they would tell a supervisor there's not room for you on the schedule.
Well, it's clearly union busting and illegal, but as Isabel says, the process, the legal process of going through the National Labor Relations Board with an unfair labor practice charge can really be drawn out, and direct action gets the goods. Well, we're running out of time, but I'd like to hear more about the role of community support, and in particular, how our listeners can support your efforts going forward and how they can keep informed.
I've talked about this a lot, but community support has been huge. I think it's been the biggest factor in bringing us together as partners in the store because it shows people that, like, there's a reason we're doing this.